What's up, Internet? You're listening to the Making's Podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Donovan.
I'm Wes.
I'm Josh. Oh. I told you I'd follow your lead. I didn't know I was immediately following your lead.
We're recording.
It was going to be quicker or something. So
That was quicker.
Yeah, I know, but you guys did it away last week. All right. Did a certain kind of thing. I messed it up. Try again.
No, we're recording. Let's go.
I'm here too.
Season professionals, 159 episodes in.
Yeah, can you tell?
Yeah, well.
So, what's up, guys? Are things as busy for you all as it is for me right now?
Yes.
Well, let's talk about how busy you've been, Sean. Why are you so busy?
Because I keep getting attached to projects, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. Like, next week I'm out for like 3 days during work for training and other things, and I have the esports thing that is now official. I have the team decided, so we have to start practicing next week, I guess. Which is going to be interesting because we don't even have the computers in yet. So I might just have them throwing a soccer ball out on the field and pretending they're using controllers. It's like this weird reverse analog.
Do you have any idea on like the specs of the equipment that you're going to be getting for?
There were 6 Alienware computers ordered for Rocket League because my district believes in overkill. But hopefully the computers in my lab will be able to handle it. I haven't even had a chance to test it yet because all that's blocked by our firewall. So our tech department has to unblock all that. Just to do tryouts this week, I brought in my home system, which I hate doing. So I brought in my computer from home. I had it at work the last 3 days and in offline mode doing tryouts. Can't even do like a competition against somebody else. I mean, they have bots, but I didn't want to do that. So they were doing a training mode, and I was evaluating how they were able to do just like simple ball handling skills, which may have been...
That's what you do in like for the soccer team.
Yeah, it is, except, you know, using a controller instead of your feet. And I have 8 spots open for the team, and it might just work out because only 8 people really showed up consistently for the tryout, so that makes my job a little bit easier.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have 2 other capable machines for the other 2 players?
No. Well, I don't know. I have to test it on the ones in my lab. And the Macs in my lab are probably 7 to 8 years old. But, I mean, the same ones I was using for Blender and doing animation. And Rocket League is an older game, too, so I'm hoping that it's okay, at least to get started with. Mm. Otherwise, I'll just have them, like, drawing diagrams and plays on the board and trying to imagine what it would be like to play.
I thought with 6 machines and 8 people, you would have people, like, on the bench.
Well, it is going to be that way. We'll have 1 starting team because it's 3 versus 3, and I'll have a whole other team for them to kind of scrimmage against, and I have like 2 alternates, but everybody will essentially practice. I want to try to involve as many people as I can because I don't want to just worry about this season, but training for the next team for the following season. That and just other district stuff, more administrative responsibilities, even though I'm still just a teacher. And Yeah, it's busy.
Good on you.
How are you, Donovan?
Yeah, I've been crazy busy. I realized this morning that it's already the 10th of October, at least when we're recording this. Like, I have 21 days to get 5 projects done before Halloween, so it's crunch time for me. So I've got the, we talked about this a second ago, you know, got the Disney villains and got the shoes. I'm so excitedly nervous about that project because I'm tattooing a pair of shoes and I've never tattooed anything before.
Did you buy a tattoo gun or?
Yeah. I got the whole setup. I got everything. If I wanted to start a tattoo business, I could open doors right now because I got everything I need.
Have you tested on yourself?
No.
Get a piece of ham and do it.
Well, there's like the part of the kit was this practice sheet, this like kind of skin feely material. And so I'm going to practice on that a little bit, but just because of time constraints, again, it's already the 10th. I can't practice too much because I need to tattoo the Marauders map on a pair of leather shoes. So I'm excited about that and doing a collaboration with another maker. So that's going to be exciting. And just so much stuff coming up these next couple months. It's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. So yeah, I've been staying busy.
Maybe Wes.
How is work?
Sorry.
How's work going? I remember you mentioned a podcast or two ago that was in jeopardy.
Yeah, it was. It turns out I didn't get laid off like I thought I was going to. But other people have. And so we've gone through 7 people in the last 2 months. And we're down to 5. And so the workload is a lot more than it was when I started. And I got a promotion. Yay. So I am now the COO of the company, which may seem like a lot in formalities, but the fact is there's only 5 of us, so it really doesn't mean much. But I'm no longer doing HR. I'm strictly in charge of the operational marketing and IT facets of an accounting firm, which is a lot of work. You wouldn't think it'd be a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So it's been stressfully interesting.
Well, good for you. I mean, that sounds awesome. It sounds like a really nice resume bullet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, in title, man, I went from IT analyst to COO. That's a leap. That's not a jump. That's a leap.
You have to wear a tie now?
No. And tomorrow,
you say you need a tie. You got any ties, you peons. I'm the CEO. Do you know who you're talking to?
I over-decorate for like holidays. And so, you know, with Halloween coming up and doing Harry Potter in the office. So I've been 3D printing like wings to put on keys to hang all over the ceilings and like doing the envelopes, you know, coming out of a fake fireplace. And I don't know, maybe I'll get fired because my boss doesn't like how into holidays I get because he doesn't believe in holidays. So we'll see how that goes. Man. Yeah. Interesting. At all times. For better or worse. It's not boring. But I'm still doing it. At least for the time being.
What's with you, Wes?
Well, I'm getting ready for IRF, which is the East Coast Rep Rap Festival in Maryland. That's this weekend. It's a big 3D printing gathering of a bunch of people, some of which I know from other events, like Joel Telling, I think is going to be there, and some people that I haven't met in person yet. I'm looking forward to doing that. Even some people, other people from the different industries, like there's a guy who has a company, he makes... he works for Cohesion 3D, which is like an alternative circuit board for the K4E Whisperer. And I think I met him briefly at Maker Faire last year. But he was asking if I'm going to this event. He like messaged me and apparently he follows my K4E videos. So
nice.
Maybe something can work out from there. That'd be cool. I was like, hey, you mind bringing that, this project and that project? He wants to check them out. So maybe I can do some finagling there, which would be cool. And I'm bringing some little things to show off. As per my normal conference gear, I'm taking my Game Boy camera, which I'm showing to the screen, Game Boy and Game Boy camera and printer, which I was known for taking to a lot of these conferences. And I think a lot of people from this group, like the 3D printing specifically group, like I haven't really delved into that side. That sub community as deep as some other folks. I don't know if I want, how far I want to deep dive into that. Maybe I just want to wait a little bit.
There's Josh, there's no waiting with that community.
Yeah,
it's the deep end.
The faces you're making,
man,
are fantastic.
I went to MRF, the Midwest Rep Rap. I'm like, yeah. I like 3D printers. Hoodalali, let's go see other people who like 3D printers. And I was like, oh boy, You, okay. You guys, this is a whole underworld of people. This isn't a like, oh, look, 3D printing stuff is neat. Like, this is the, if you like board games and then there's people who like role play D&D, that's the comparison.
Interesting. So like somebody who made his own elf ears going to Dragon Con.
More than that.
More than that.
More than that.
Oh, gosh.
Like, it's not a, I mean, I'm sure that they were very cordial to me as a novice. I would say a little like more than a novice 3D printer enthusiast, but they were humoring me. They love some 3D printing. It was great. It was cool.
Was it a bless your heart kind of thing? Oh, bless your heart.
I walked around going like, oh, this is neat. Like, I have a printer too. They're like, what do you have, like a Prusa? Like, yeah. Like, you didn't make your own out of like scraps you found and programmed your own board and did all this other stuff? And I'm like, no, I bought a printer and I print swords. They're like, that's cute. And they turn around and walk away. Oh, God.
I look forward to these conversations.
You know, kind of in that same vein, a lot of the stuff that I've been test 3D printing on my 3D printer and all the adjustments and everything that I've tried to make to it, most of my stuff has come from Thingiverse, because it's kind of, you know, the most, at least from what I see, it's the most well-known end-all be-all of 3D printing-ness on the internet. But then I stumbled upon this website called 3D Cults.
Mm-hmm.
And oh man, I was like, these are hardcore.
Yeah.
This is like Thingiverse is like child's play. You go into 3D Cults and you're like, holy crap. Some of the stuff that people are making are way beyond my patience to want to try and make something like that.
Have you tried My Mini Factory?
Uh-uh.
That's a good one too. They have a lot of free things.
Yeah, there was this one. It was like a print in place mech, you know, kind of like a Voltron-y type mech. And I was just like, that's got to take like a week to print. Because the thing was huge. And it's so, it had like so many interlocking parts that all like hinged and moved and all this other kind of stuff. It was really fascinating. It really was. The stuff that people come up with, I think, are just absolutely incredible, because I'm like, I couldn't do that. Like, I don't have the patience or the need or the skill or the want to do anything compared to what these people are putting out. And I was blown away at some of the stuff I saw on this, because I'm like, it's like going from Tinkercad to Fusion. It's like, I know how to do Tinkercad, and then you step into Fusion and you're like, oh, I don't know, this is this is beyond.
That's
my
how world. I felt walking into Murph. I'm like, yeah. I like printers, and I'm like, oh god, I don't like printers like you guys like printers.
Okay. Yeah,
but yeah, that is a place to make deals.
Yeah,
I remember I was hanging out with Joel, because Joel and I are friends, and Joel and Joe Prusa were there, and they were the kings of the layer. And he was like, I'm going to go hang out with all these people so that we can make deals for the next like 6 months of content. And so it's definitely a place to connect with those people, or not with those people. I don't mean to say it like that, like with people who are the manufacturers or the reps of those
right.
Very intricate and very specialized pieces or components or technology or, you know, models within the 3D printing community, because it runs deep.
I mean, what you talk about these people, like what kinds of things do they make? Is it just like, what do they make?
Well, their printer is like, the whole rip-rap idea is you can use a printer to build a printer. And they take that as a challenge. And they're like, oh, okay, well, anybody can build a printer. How can I make a printer different? And so they had a guy at Murph that made, I think it was called the White Knight. He made a belt-driven printer. So one guy commissioned this guy that I think made race cars or something. And he had this big like unveiling, and he made and how big was the thing? Like an 18 inch wide it was a belt. So it's pretty much infinite, and you could print like an entire spear, and it would just like roll off the end. And it's like stuff that doesn't exist anywhere
else. Oh, like the bed was a belt.
Yeah, the bed. Yeah. The build surface is a belt. And so it's like printing on a conveyor belt.
Whoa.
a lot of people build making their own filaments, which was cool. You'll see a bunch of little gadgets that will try to like improve your print quality by drying out your filament, and like a lot of kind of grassroots businesses that are geared toward the 3D printing industry. Something made in their garage and it kind of turned out to be cool, and so they either kind of pre-production or Kickstarter. I don't know about IRF, but at MRF, the Midwest one, they had like all the major 3D printer companies that were there, and some were show, like Lulzbot was debuting a new printer. And then the layperson was like, oh, cool, look at that, a new printer. And then the other like 95% of the people in that building walk up like, that thing sucks. Hasn't printed an actual print. Doesn't see the thing work. Like, it does. Look at that. That thing is like this, and it's just like the mini because of this. And they're like super scrutinizing for like quality, or, you know, the substance that of parts and like the software. And I remember we were at the after party and we were all hanging out, and somebody busted out this motherboard, and like half of the room stopped, and they all just like hovered around it, and I was like, ooh, like pointing at the intricacies of like an unsoldered PCB.
Wow.
Like
for a 3D printer.
I assume so. I don't know.
just a random motherboard.
I'm a big dum-dum who had a beer in my hand and not, you know, oogling over the PCB without a magnifying glass. But yeah, it was neat. I was educated very quickly about, I was like, oh, I've got this one kind of problem. And then like five people jumped in to tell me their particular solution to that problem, which was really helpful. But at the same time, like as a novice, extremely overwhelming, because they're talking graduate level understanding of something that most people are like, I'm going to find a model on Thingiverse and hit print. And sometimes it prints and sometimes it's spaghetti. And they're like, ugh.
Right.
Thingiverse is so dumb, so contrived. Not that it's elitist,
my kids love it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's what I got going on.
And I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah, like, I hope so.
So there's a MRF, there's an IRF. I wonder if there's going to be a WRF.
Probably. They're the silliest names. But I wouldn't doubt it. West Coast. The wet curve.
Midwest?
I guess Midwest is one squished together word.
Wummerf?
I don't know where the East Coast is, but the Midwest, I think we talked about on the show, was in the middle of Amish, like farm country, in this place in Indiana. And it just happened because these two guys liked to 3D print, so they started hanging out. And then they told two friends, and they told two friends, and eventually they needed to rent out half the space at, like, the 4-H fairgrounds kind of deal. And yeah. It was the whole thing was a huge paradox. And I just walked around with, like, I don't know what's happening here. I feel like a stranger. Although I know most of this stuff, but I feel completely unqualified to be in this room.
Well, that's how I normally feel at all the woodworking shows. So, yeah, it's no different for me. We're always in those, like, meetup, you know, things afterwards. And we're like, oh, what have you woodworked or whatever? And I'm like, well, a couple years ago I built this one thing. Nothing since then. What are you doing here is what I'm expecting them to say, or I know they're thinking. But
it's not going to be like that.
No, because everybody knows Wes. Everybody knows.
Well,
why you're there.
I mean, you can't help but feel a poser if you're in a place like that. Like, you know, you go to like a, I don't know.
But to say, I mean, it's kind of like the woodworking show. People have their own kind of language. Yeah. They have their own inside jokes.
Yeah.
You have the people that are like really popular in the community, unless you're in that particular community. Like I was standing in a group with Joel and these people came up and they were just like talking. And everybody stopped and started listening, and they were laughing along, and then they walked off. I'm like, who is that? And they're like, you don't know who that was? I'm like, that's the guy that designed the 3D Benchy. He's this, and I'm like, oh, like the little boat thing? And they're like, ugh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's talk about Benchy. What is the point of that boat?
It tests a lot of different things in one model. So it tests, like, the ability to have bridging. it's like a not necessarily a calibration cube, but it's pretty much become the de facto.
Yeah.
Like, how well can you print this boat? And if you print the boat like crap, then your printer is garbage. If you print it great, then great.
I don't know if I want to print it on my printer, if that's the case.
But yeah, that's the deal with the tiny boat. And
okay. Yeah. I get that now, because I've been seeing it everywhere and variations on the boat. And like, yeah, I was like, I don't understand what this boat is or why it's a thing.
So what do you got going on, Josh?
I don't know. It's been kind of slow lately. Honestly, we put out a video today.
That was fun. I saw that.
The toilet paper.
Candy. Yeah. The candy trailer. Our Halloween trick or treat cart. Which is not performing super well, but I think we may be like a week or two early.
Well, but that was one question I did have is like the force of the candy coming out, because you're using like full size candies, right?
No, there's little like snack packs that come in.
The snack packs?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to inadvertently hit somebody at, you know, point blank range, is it going to ruin their night? Hard.
No, okay. No. Like, it's a battery operated leaf.
So it's blower. Not like Adam Savage's Coke machine.
No.
No.
Yeah. Donovan's thinking it's going to turn into shrapnel.
Well, we.
Donnie's down to the count.
We talked about it. I mean, this was a Lowe's project, and this is the second project for the third quarter. So this was talked about like months ago, and we pitched them ideas. And I'm always trying to find a new way to do something that's boring and kind of like not fun. And we talked about being able to take trick or treating down the street, and we're like, oh, what if we just like shot random people with toilet paper? What if we just like make a mobile teepee cart? And then it was like, well, what if we did something nice with the teepee? And then it was that, and then it kind of evolved from there. But yeah, we talked about
then candy.
Yeah. We talked about having the little air gun that we made a while ago. We talked about having that. And I was like, well, we just put some leaf blowers in there. We just have two of them. And so, yeah, it like it launches the candy, but it doesn't shoot out the candy. It's just like, kind of, it's like if you go to a parade and your kids are lining the streets and like the people in the car, like kind of toss the candy. That's kind of what it does. It gets a good like toss.
You know, I just thought it would have been a better cross promotion with Taco Bell where you shoot the toilet paper at the people after eating it.
Yeah, try and sell them on that one.
That might be more fit for my channel.
Shoot out some nachos.
Mm.
Doritos tacos.
William Osmond will get on that. Make nachos in a new way.
Hmm. But yeah, that was something silly. And then all the kids were happy they got to dress up in Halloween costumes like in early. The end of September.
It looked like the whole street was dressed up. That was just all the kids of the families. And
that was Bob's family, my family, the neighbor kids, and like a friend of both of ours and like their kids.
I was trying to figure out are they celebrating Halloween that early?
Yeah, we just kind of like, there's a bunch of families that all hang out. Yeah. We're like, hey, we need to shoot people in costume. If your kids have a costume, they come on over and hang out. That was the mass of kids that showed up. None of us have like one kid.
Well, it's just Anthony, right?
Who's in the T-Rex suit?
Huh?
It was in the T-Rex suit.
Oh, some kid from next door. Mm. Yeah, Anthony, he lives like 40-something minutes away, and his daughter is, I think, just over a year old. And I think they were actually doing something. They weren't there for that. So Forby was in town, and so we were shooting like dual camera. And I made the thumbnail, and I put the thumbnail up on the video for the sponsor, and I was about to launch it. And then yesterday I noticed that like you can see my head and the other camera poking up out from behind the stupid thing that nobody paid attention to, so I had to go back in and stamp over my own head with some extra leaves and Photoshop myself out. But it was silly. I mean, it's a big silly thing, and Lowe's is really happy that we wanted to make a big silly thing for them, so it was win-win. It sucks. I mean, it's not performing as all the other ones, but we didn't really super expect it to. But the people who hold the purse strings are happy, and we're happy because we got to make something silly.
That's good.
Either way, I think it's a really fun video. I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was fun because we shot the talking points. Like usually like we'll do the wrap up where Bob turns the camera and starts talking. And we were going to launch the candy the kids were going to like be on the ground rummaging around for candy, and Bob was going to turn around and talk to the camera. So I had to like, I was the director for all these kids. There's like 20 kids. And I'm like, okay, this is what's going to happen. You all have to shut your mouth and don't speak. Like not a single word. Cause it only shot out so much candy. And so not everybody got some. I'm like, if you don't get a piece of candy, that's fine. We'll give you some afterward. You can talk to your agent and we'll give you some. I'm like, you guys are extras. You work for literal like chocolate covered peanuts right now. Don't say a single word. And, so they shoot the candy and Bob turns around. And he's like, well, that was a great project. And like my kids are like, Dad, I didn't get any candy. He got two candies. I'm like, shh. And so I'm behind this cart going, shh, quit, shut your mouth. Like the whole time.
And, those are the behind the scenes we want to see.
Man, that shot, like you couldn't see me in the video, but that's all you could hear. You couldn't hear the kids saying anything. You could just hear me going, shh, shut up. We're trying to say something, shut up. And then all the parents are like in the grass just laughing at me. But yeah, that was kids and animals, man. Don't work with kids and animals. But it was fun. I mean, it's a silly thing. So we've got that. We've got another project that's done. It's a super simple like shop project thing. It'll probably be out next week. We just finished another project out at the farm that I designed. It is pretty cool.
So yeah, hey, your demolition video was pretty fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Anthony puts those together, smashing up stuff. But we actually built a project that I got to design in Fusion, and it works.
Is it the wall?
The wall?
Well, because in the behind-the-scenes video, you guys were talking about, okay, I'm going to get the shot where I'm, like, pushing the wall down, and it, like, goes down, and then we'll cut to this. And
oh, those were the barn doors.
Oh, the barn? Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was where the barn doors went. This one, I don't think we've talked about yet, but it's done too. So we have like stuff in the shoot, which is kind of cool. It's now it's kind of slow. So Bob's been like working on R2 little by little. I've been trying to fix broken 3D printers. Should go to Earth and talk to all their manufacturers and tell them to fix it.
I had to disassemble the nozzle this morning on my 3D printer and replace it and replace the tubing and... Fixing 3D printers is not fun.
Nope. Which led me, I was listening to the episode last week where you guys were talking about time versus money on like 3D printers and lasers and all that. And Donovan, I think your point is exactly right. Like your time is worth money. And then trying to get like a Glowforge where it just kind of works consistently. And ours does. I mean, I use ours probably once a week. And the camera is a little wonky. It doesn't read the little barcode thing anymore. The image when you try to put it on something is a little skewed. But, I mean, it works.
Yeah.
And now with some of the printers, like, some of them just work. And I don't have to worry about it. And so now, like, we have the CR10 that I had to, like, fix. And I fixed it. And you got to re-level it every single time. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then the Prusa, which worked flawlessly like forever, it broke. And so I've had to replace a bunch of pieces, and now the people at Prusa don't know what's wrong with it. So like that thing is out of commission. But you're exactly right. I think that, you know, it's your money and time on a scale and where they intersect, you know, that's your sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a lot of good conversations with people on Instagram that wanted to talk about that topic ever since we put out the episode. So it's been good talk. I'm still not convinced either way. Like I still haven't made a decision. Not to say that I'm not convinced either way, but like I still haven't made a decision as to which path I'm going. My biggest issue right now seems to be space, talking about space and the size of everything and where it's gonna go, and yeah, we'll figure it out someday somehow.
Well, the Glowforge, I know, comparing it to Wes's K40, like Wes's in particular, where he took the bottom out to like make room for the cup engraver, the Glowforge doesn't have that much room underneath. It has the honeycomb like tray that you can pull out, but you still couldn't put a water bottle in it.
It doesn't no, which I right. mean, which that's not going to be, that's not what I'm going to use it for, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the projects that I've done in the past, like the Game Boy, and one that I'm doing now, that's another video that I'm coming out with, is doing these, doing the little inserts for the wooden NES cartridges, is laser cutting those and engraving them and layering them on all that kind of stuff. And it's like, that's going to be the kind of stuff that I'm going to use it for. Like, I don't have any intention to, you know, make bottles or mass produce anything. It's just, everything associated with projects that I have coming out. I mean, there's this kit, since I do a lot of the pixel art, I have a lot of people interested in like kits that they can take and do their own little pixel art, like I do at my booths at Maker Faire and Tinker Fest and, you know, all these kind of conventions and everything. And so I'm designing this little laser cut kit that folds in on itself and has like a little tray for pixels that you can open it up, you know, and you have your little pixel board and you have your math quadrant so you can like do mapping with it if you want to. And the little tray that you can pull it out and have all, you know, have all your pixels and you can sit and, you know, you just have it in your lap and sit and do pixel art. And it's like, there's all that kind of stuff that I'm trying to develop for teachers in the area, in my area, that want stuff like this, that I don't have easy enough access to a laser cutter to just print them out and give them to them fast enough. And so it's, I mean, there's going to be like a very specific use for what would be a laser cutter beyond, you know, designing Yeti bottles and things like that.
When Forby's in town, his wife is a weaver. Like, she weaves and makes textiles. She makes woven goods.
Like, and on a loom?
Yeah, like on a big, a super big loom. And she makes pillows and purses and all kinds of really nice handmade stuff. But she also makes a little kit that you can, like, make your own little tiny laser-cut wooden loom. Like, you can, like, weave stuff and make, you know, a little, like, say, 4x4 piece of whatever. But she either hands those out or sells those at a lot of craft shows that she does. And so whenever Forby's in town, he buys like a big stack of the maple plywood from Glowforge, has it shipped to Bob's house. And when he gets here, it's just like, it's an assembly line. Have you messed with any of the software? Because from what I understand, that's the really the differentiating factor, is the software interface between the laser cutters across the market.
No. I've never, I mean, aside from the Epilog lasers that, I mean, I love Epilog, but besides their lasers, I haven't touched any kind of software for anything like the K40 or the Glowforge. I mean, I do everything in Inkscape, and it was my assumption that it's like, I design everything on Inkscape, you know, make sure with the Epilog, the lines you want to cut have to be 0.001 inches. Anything over than that is a raster rather than a vector. And I realize that it's like there's probably different ways of interpreting lines depending on the laser cutter you have. But it was always my assumption that it's like, you know, I can do all of my work in Inkscape, just bring the file in and hit print like I do in the Epilog. I guess I'd never asked, is it different?
In my instance, any items that you want to have raster engraved have to be black, like, you know, filled areas or
regardless lines of like thickness or anything.
Yeah,
like that?
It doesn't care about line thickness. If you're wanting to do a cut operation, the line, the vector line has to be like 100% red, like RGB values. So if it's red, regardless of the thickness, it'll interpret like the middle of any, like, let's say you have a line that's 5 pixels wide, it figures out the middle of that, and that's what it's wherever cuts. The centermost part of the line, that's what it cuts on.
Interesting.
Then if you have any lines that are blue, it does vector engrave, which is sort of like it's like a trace without cutting all the way through.
Like a score,
yeah. So that has, in RGB values, it has to be 100% blue and nothing else. So if it's red or blue, those are the ones you have to have exactly the right colors. Any other colors you have in Inkscape, it'll just default them to black in K40 Whisperer, which is kind of cool. Wow. And there's some other software that I've used with my laser that's on my X-Carve that is a similar method. It uses red, black, and blue.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Glowforge separates by color. It doesn't specify it has to be those colors. It just looks for different colors. So if you have lines, say you have like an SVG that you bring in and they're all black lines, it's going to treat them all the same. And it'll give you the option to cut, engrave, or score. And then depending on the material that you choose, it will have preset speeds and, you know, cut rates and cut intensities and that kind of stuff. And so like when I did last Christmas, I did like a bunch of dog heads, just like Wes did, like the Harry Potter ornaments. And so for those, I grouped the different colors. Like if I wanted to engrave something darker or deeper, it would make a darker burn mark. And so I would just do varying intensities, and I would just group those areas together by color. It didn't have to be a specific color as long as they were the same color.
With the Glowforge, do you have to use materials specifically sold by Glowforge in order to cut them on the... Okay.
Mm-hmm. It allows you to... It allows those presets, but you can choose whatever you want. Like if I had a piece of acrylic that wasn't one of their pieces of acrylic, and honestly, even the stuff that is theirs now, our little camera thing doesn't read the QR code, so you got to manually select the material anyway.
Mm. Okay. Because that would make a difference.
Yeah, no, you don't have to. I think the machine says it's like a 12 by 20, but I think you get 19 and some change by 11 is the actual cut area. The software is all web-based, so they can update stuff kind of in real time, and then sometimes it kind of glitches and does weird stuff. Mm-hmm. But you can design on one machine and send it to another machine to cut it. Like it's pretty handy. I mean, I like the interface, but then again, I never really used any other laser engraving software. I was just told by people that was the biggest hang-up in using a laser cutter.
You know, I know with the Epilogue, I mean, again, this is probably just specific to Epilogue, is that the computer just sees it as a printer. So you would just open, you convert your SVG into a PDF, just a picture, and you open it in Adobe or whatever your PDF reader of choice is, Foxit or whatnot, and then you just hit print, and you print to the Epilogue. And then it pushes the file to the printer, and you just hit go, and it prints it. So there's no interface or program or anything like that with the Epilogue. It's just, you know, you're printing from a PDF into the printer.
So, how does it know what's cut and what's not?
Yeah, would you have to do separate jobs for cutting and engraving and scoring?
No, like I said, like for the Epilogue, any line that's 0.001 inches, it cuts. Anything other than that, regardless of like color or anything like that, it just engraves. So
you couldn't get a nice, like, crisp line unless it cut all the way through your material?
I don't know.
Like, if you wanted, like, a stroke, you would have to, like, color in that stroke rather than just, like, drawing text?
I don't know. I know there's different variables as far as, like, power and speed that would determine the depth of your engraving and whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. I've never had to use it for anything like that to know what the functionality of it is.
I always assumed that they ran off a G code, just like almost anything else that was manufacturing based, you know, 3D printer or CNC. So the laser printer really is almost like a printer or cutter. I mean,
at least the Epilogue ones that I've used. I can't, you know, I've never used the K40. I can't attest to that. I've never used the Glowforge. I can't attest to that. But, you know, based on all of my experience for the past year and a half with an Epilogue, it's a printer.
You can have a laser run off of G-code. It just, like, if you have an Arduino as the controller in it. But then, if you were to do, like, a job from Fusion 360, like in the CAM software kind of package within it, you would just basically make like the bit width like the smallest it could possibly read, kind of thing. And then you just kind of think of it in terms of CNCing with an infinitely small bit, or, you know, whatever. It's probably like 0.01 millimeters or whatever. And then it would do the operations like rastering side to side using whatever the equivalent of that would be in CAM software. And it, depending upon your controller, you can adjust like the speed of the bit, which is essentially like the power of the laser. So there's like some, there's an area where they can kind of intermingle with G-code, but I don't think that's the most common.
I always assume
for sure.
Out of the four of us, I'm the only one that's never used a laser cutter.
It's okay.
Well, they're neat.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. I wasn't aware.
Well, I'm trying to look at the idea that you're talking about, just like raster engraving, and I've never done like a replication of an image like you would think on the Glowforge. I'm trying to think how you do it. Like if you would import like
picture. That's exactly what you guys did for the Shield Hydra.
No, it's an SVG, and so it wasn't like a. I mean, everything was monochromatic. So it didn't, like you're talking about, it would be a printer. Like it didn't adjust its intensity based on the shade difference of an image.
Yeah, I just filled in what was within the lines.
Huh?
It just filled in what was within the lines.
Right. Yeah, everything was the same intensity, you know, where it was told to cut. It, like if you were to try to like laser engrave someone's face.
The epilogue is like that too. But you can just, before you print, you can tell it power and speed. Is your variable. The higher the power, the hotter it is. Mm-hmm. The speed adjusts. Like, so if you literally want to burn through a piece of wood, you amp up the power, you drop down the speed, and it's just you know fire everywhere. But the I don't know about the K40 or the Glowforge, but I mean with the epilogue, you can literally gauge like how deep you want burned into whatever your material is. And there's presets and everything for the whether you're using like leather or plywood or hardwood or solid wood or, you know, any other plethora of materials that you can put in a laser cutter. There's presets for those. And then you can adjust to figure out like if you want it deeper, if you want etched deeper, if you want it lighter, and you know, and the slower you go, like the darker it's going to be, the more it's going to etch, but it takes a long time. Like 3D printing and laser cutting, like depending on the complexity of your project, like it can take hours and mm-hmm. hours to print something.
Do you guys go walk through, let's say, like Hobby Lobby or Target or any of those similar stores on a regular basis?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how much stuff appears just to be simply laser cut now.
And Michael's.
And Michael's too. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like any of those stores. Yeah. And I'm walking through and I'm looking at the pieces and I'm looking at the pricing. And I'm wondering to myself, is that price competitive enough to warrant just buying it from the shelf? Or is it still cheaper to make it on my own? Minus the cost of like the laser printer. Because I'm sitting there, I'm still trying to pitch this to my wife, and we have plans to buy like a K40 possibly like early in the new year, but I'm trying to have a good list in sense of okay, well once I get this thing, you know, I need to have things ready to go. You know, what am I going to be doing with it, and just kind of thinking through it that way.
Based on my experience, I mean, this is just my experience with it. It's still more expensive to do your own thing than it would be to just buy it outright.
Yeah, I think it would depend on what it is that you're making or what it is that you're thinking about getting.
Now, obviously, like, you can make it however you want to, so you can specify it. But as far as, like, cost, it's still more expensive to do it yourself.
I mean, these are, most of the things I'm seeing that I'm picking up are, like, letters that are laser cut. I mean, things that are, like, straight all the way through. It's not rasterizing. It's not an image. Things that theoretically should be a little bit faster, and that stuff is being mass produced anyways. I'm just wondering, I guess scale, cost, you know, how those things are being mass produced. If they just have a a massive, you know, row of epilogues that's doing this all at once, or
today's the day we do F's, you guys. Let's do F's.
Right.
Everyone's doing F's. You're fired. Actually, you did a lowercase F. We're doing uppercase F's today.
If you want a good point of reference for like producing things, there is a couple called Spitfire Labs. They're in New York City. I'm a huge fan of theirs, and we talk a lot about, because they use an epilogue and they mass produce these Nintendo controllers. They're like multi-layered with the image of different games like baked into the controller, and they do maps and they do huge pieces of art, all laser cut and all done in a laser cutter. And but they have it's a process for them, and they have it down to where they would be a good source of reference in terms of like a mom and pop operation, two people with a laser cutter, like producing something. And Wes walked away like he knows exactly who I was talking about.
Like he has a thing.
Oh my gosh. Yes. See, there it is. Yep.
That's cool.
Wow.
So what I basically just stepped away from the mic, ran out the room and grabbed a piece from that same Instagrammer, Spitfire Labs, that he just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I want to make that.
And it is pretty cool. And if you're in the live stream, you can see the piece that I'm holding.
It's got tons of games on it.
It's got tons of games.
And like that probably takes days to do that.
Yeah, because that's all engraved, so that's at least a millimeter deep.
Yeah.
Plus varying intensities to give it the shading.
Yep.
Over, that's plus a huge piece of wood, too.
Controllers that are cut out themselves, yeah.
39 out of 50.
It's intense. Yeah,
they do, like, limited runs of these things. This is, like you said, number 39 out of 50. And I really enjoyed it. I still love it. But then I noticed a bug. Right here, the duck has only, like, no face. And I took a picture of it and sent it to them. They're like, huh, we never noticed that before. I'm like, yep, see.
So I wonder if it's like a baseball card where there's an error, if it's worth more at that point.
And that's not the only time I've noticed errors in their stuff. Like, and I'm obviously quick to call them out on it because that's kind of how I am sometimes.
And they designed all that stuff, too.
They did a run of like VHS tapes or something. I forget what it was. And there was like something spelled wrong. I'm like, oh yeah, you spelled that wrong. They're like, damn it. And you can see in the background of the picture, like dozens and dozens and dozens of stuff they've already done. And they're like, trash.
So, I mean, these conversations are always interesting from a certain standpoint, because we have access to these machines and, you know, we all have 3D printers at this point. I will soon have a laser cutter, and it sounds like Donovan is kind of on that track too. And thinking about, you know, what is the purpose of having it? Is it just to be creative and do different things, which is kind of what I wanted the 3D printer for to begin with. But my wife has such a business and production sense that we could only invest in these things that we're going to get a huge return from. Because I'm not going to get a return on YouTube videos buying this stuff. It has to be something from production that where I'm producing a good that I can turn around and sell.
You have enough time now, you could get a little jump start on Christmas things with the K40 and make your money back and then some by Christmas.
I pitched that, but there's other financial issues that she doesn't want to take that risk right now. But we're doing that with the 3D printer. So we are Christmas-fying some things that we've already been doing and doing vendor events again. So we'll be, and we might use a profit from that than to roll into the laser cutter.
Nice.
Yeah, I know, at least for me, like that's the part that I struggle with, is trying to find out how to make money from these things other than the content. Because my focus in all of this is the content. And I have these machines that could theoretically make money. Like the past couple days I've been binge watching videos on YouTube. It's like, how to make money with your 3D printer. And a lot of it seems to be just like print on demand service, or like coming up with some kind of specialty something that you can sell, which I don't have that specialty something. And so it's
fidget spinner.
I feel not like anymore. That heyday has kind of,
oh yeah, that's
gone. Yeah, he was mailbox joking. Flags.
Okay.
Custom mailbox flags.
And so for me, like my biggest thing But I have ideas for what I could do with a laser cutter. But I mean, for like my plotter and my 3D printer, it's a struggle for me personally trying to find ways to make money with them rather than the content themselves. It's something I need to do.
To
justify the expense of having them.
With your creativity and background in art, though, you should be able to take something that might already exist and then change it or modify it in a way that has more value and becomes more appealing to somebody else.
Yeah. Which, again, like, there's tons of stuff that I could do with the laser cutter, because that's been my main medium of digital fabrication for 2 years now. And now I'm just pushing into the realm of like the plotter and the 3D printer and all this other kind of stuff that I'm trying to learn how to navigate that world. But yeah, there are tons of ideas for things that I could, you know, modify or alter or customize or whatever with a laser cutter, but I don't have a laser cutter. So, you know, it's trying to figure out how to make use of what I have now so that I can afford to have what I want later.
Well, I will speak to the X-Carve. Like, my X-Carve didn't start making money until many months into me owning it. Because you don't know what you can do with it until you start practicing and playing around on it.
Oh, like, gosh, you CNC, have, that's another one.
I would say out of all of those big things that you're talking about wanting a return, the CNC is probably lowest on that mark.
That's in terms of, like,
out of your big robots that you're talking about buying.
Yeah.
Like, for you personally, what you have already envisioned, like, for the pixel art and all that, like, that's laser cutter stuff. Like, what you can do with a laser cutter is far faster and more precise and a lot quicker and probably a little more tailored to what you particular are doing than a CNC would be.
And less messy.
Yeah. Less infrastructure. But again, I didn't start making money on it until I knew what I could do. And then I could go, hey, I can make that thing on my CNC. And people go, I didn't even think about that. Can you make me one of these? I go, yeah, I sure can.
The States. Is that what you're talking about?
Even before the States, it was like signs for people, custom signs that they wanted. And then the States followed because I was like, hey, check out this thing I just made on my CNC. I have technology to cut stuff out really, really clean and precise. And so the States, like, that finished off paying for it and then has just perpetually given me business every couple months. But that was not in the bullpen waiting for me to plug in my X-Carve. That came with it. That came with the ability. That came with your social media being able to push the stuff that you think is cool. And now people see you have the capability. Or if, you know, you do make those NES cartridges, and if people like want a custom one with their own name on it,
cool.
Like, that's something that may not have noticed or may not have thought that could be available beforehand. And so, like, trying to be smart and trying to figure out the cost benefit ratio of something is just, it's a responsible thing. But you don't know where the 2 months into your laser cutting experience is going to lead you. And that could be the thing that eventually pays it off.
Yeah,
and I know from experience, because I'm like, I'm going to get a thing because I see internet people have it. I am not as meticulous and perfect in my execution of things as this machine can be. And so I looked at it very narrow, that I wanted to cut something. I wanted it to be perfect and crisp. I'm like, yay. I said the same things. Yeah, it'll pay for itself through business. And yeah, it did, but not in ways that I thought it would.
Yeah. I mean, I look at, I'd bring up her as a point of reference a lot, but I look at Nicole and everything that she has been making cutter, When Geeks Craft. And I look at everything that they've been doing, and they've got, she would have to speak to this personally, but it seems like her stuff is sold even before it's made. Like, she's at that point where people know the quality of her work and what she can do with that thing, that when she's like, hey, I'm going to do this project, and it's sold.
That's also good marketing, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, thankfully, I got in at the ground floor, so to speak, and I got, you know, I got my piece early. So now she's doing Dreamland from No. Dreamland from the Simpsons, the fantasy TV show. What's it called?
Itchy and Scratchy.
Enchantment.
No. Enchantment. She's doing Dreamland from Enchantment. I'm like, that would be fantastic. You know, this problem. Yeah.
People watch that show?
Oh, yeah.
Disenchantment, right?
Yeah. Disenchantment. That's the one. Yeah, that's the one.
It's...
Buff.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, it's... I mean, I see what she's doing, and that's... Like, it's inspiring to be like, yeah, I could be doing that too if I, you know, if it was right there. And so I need to be figuring out how I can do something similar, comparable on the 3D printer, because that's what I have. And I haven't figured that out yet.
I think the 3D printer is harder for it in a lot of ways.
Well, it's also so ubiquitous that it's like, it seems like everybody has a 3D printer.
No, I don't think that's the issue. And no,
I said it seems that way. I know it's not the case, but there are even people that are like, yeah, I just found out that we have a 3D printer at work. At your work? Where do you work? Like,
there's a lot of places to do.
Yeah.
But the difference is, like, a 3D printer is that third dimension. It is harder to design for. More people are kind of at the mercy of what other people have already created. And you have a background in 2D design and drawing, and the laser cutter is more conducive to that type of design and style.
Yeah, and it's more conducive to, like, my experience, for one, and just my thought process and how I look at things. You know, if I was more CAD oriented, like, you know, Wes or Sean, or, you know, if that was my world, if that were where I came from, like, yeah, it would probably be a lot easier for me to figure out this. But for right now, it's still a struggle. I mean, it's a fun struggle. I'm enjoying it. I really am. As frustrating as it is sometimes when it stops working, it's still been really fun. So I'm trying not to complain too much about
it. We have half a nunchuck now.
I do. And this thing is so cool. It's so cool.
It's pretty.
It's kid-sized. It looks tiny.
I was wondering how the proportions were.
Yeah. No, for my five-year-old, this thing, perfect. I mean, it's a little sharp down here, but whatever. Yeah. This is perfect. And it looks so much better than anything I could have carved.
No, that's not Filamentum. Where'd you get that? Is that Amazon Super Shiny?
Yeah, it's CC3D Gold.
Looks nice.
Josh is a good-looking model.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. You do good work, sir.
I got to make his eyeballs stay in, though.
Totally gonna pimp your name out on my video. So if it on it, like, I'm not trying to, like, I'm not bragging by any means, but it's like, as much as people have requested this particular build from the beginning, and as good as this thing looks, like, I'm totally expecting this video to hit 1 million views. Cause, like, my Sword of Fire, which it looks okay. The video's okay. Like, it's at 700,000 views. Like, the scythe is at, like, 500,000. The foam shurikens is, like, 400,000, something like that. Like, wow. as in demand as this particular project has been from the beginning. Like, my 10th comment on my first Ninjago video is, like, make the nunchucks. Like, I anticipate this video is going to do very well. Very well.
Yeah, but see, now you've changed. Now it's 3D printed. You didn't carve it.
No.
I never got a 3D printer.
But that's okay. I mean, I get the comments like that. It's like, yeah, but I don't know
how to carve. If only I had a set of chisels.
Mm. Yeah, I know.
I could make that too if I had a $5,000 printer.
If I only had hands.
See, and that was kind of my my inspiration for doing the interactive videos. I mean, it's like, even with the Disney villain picture frames that I'm doing for Halloween, this is if you want to do it, cut it by hand. This is how you do it. If you want to do it on a 3D printer, this is how you do it. If you want to do it with whatever, like, to show the different ways, so that there's no, so you can give people options that if they don't have a 3D printer, hey, cut it out by hand. Or if they don't have hand tools, hey, you could do it with this. Or just,
you are always going to have those comments, though.
No, I understand. Yep. I totally understand that.
I was making a joke when I brought it up, though.
But it's
funny because it's true.
It is funny because it's true. And honestly, like, that was a big catalyst for wanting to start doing the interactive content that I'm going to be doing. It's like the tool cabinet. I'm building two full tool cabinets, one completely with hand tools and one completely with power tools, to give people a choice, to give them an option, to show them that there are options and ways. And a lot of makers lately that I've noticed have been doing that. They've been, you know, they've been telling people, hey, there are other ways to make this thing. Bob has been really good with that, saying, if you don't have this, there's other ways to do this process. And he shows the process, or he shows the options, like, in the same video. And what I'm doing is that I'm just breaking that process apart and giving people the option to see what process they want to follow. Hence the interactive nature of, you know, my stuff.
We just say that to shut people up.
That's what I thought. It was a preemptive strike for trolls.
No, I know.
No, that's half jest. But, like, Bob actually cares that when, you know, when people say that, he wants to have that relatability. Where I'm like, I'll put that on a 3D printer, or I'll cut that out on the laser, and it'll be done, and people will say, hey, neat. And then they go, I didn't have a laser beam, or I don't have a 3D printer. I'm like, well, if you really want to make this, if you're that invested in this thing, then figure it out. But that's my particular, that my nature, to go, like, that thing is dope, I don't have it, how would I do that with what I have? Or is my drive so strong that, just like you, now it's time to upgrade to a 3D printer, or is it time to upgrade to that capability? Mm-hmm. So, like, I see what we do, like, a majority of the pie chart is, yes, it's empathy, right? It's trying to reach people where they are and be accessible. But at the same time, show me something I don't know. Show me something cool. Like, you made that thing neater than I could make it with a handsaw and some cardboard. Like, whoa, I didn't know that 3D print. Like, the kids or people that you're going to show this video to may not know what 3D printing is. Mm-hmm. And so rather than people going, like, well, I don't have that thing. Yeah. Like, that's just jealousy and whining. Or someone goes, what is that thing? Tell me more. I want to be able to do that too. And that's the people that you're hoping to reach instead of
exactly. Just, and it's jealous. Like, that's why I really enjoy doing booze and stuff at maker fairs and conventions and Tinkerfest and, you know, STEM. They had a STEM convention at my kid's school the other night. It's like, it's cool to be able to show them this as a catalyst for inspiration. Because honestly, like, a lot of the videos out there on YouTube, like, we're not, even us as makers or as woodworkers or whatever, like, we're not going to build that thing. We're not going to print that thing. We're not going to do that thing. But it could be a catalyst for motivation for us to then go and make something else. And, like, even though I am fully aware, like, I'm fully aware that the majority of the people that watch my videos are never going to make anything that I've ever made in any of my videos. But maybe it will inspire them to go make something. And that has been the whole drive behind getting into YouTube and doing all of this, is to try and inspire people to make, to create, to be creative. Because I just have so much creative stuff in my head. I need to get it out. And if it inspires somebody to do something with it, that's great. If they never build a Millennium Falcon Theater for their kids, that's fine. If they build something with their kids because they got inspired by watching me build a Millennium Falcon Theater for my kids, perfect. Like, my purpose for being here has been fulfilled. So, yeah,
right on.
That's my rant.
That's probably a good switching point. What are you guys geeking out about?
Okay, I'm going to go first, because, man.
Might as well. You're already talking.
Keep it rolling.
I spent so much time in the filmmaking world and whatnot. It's still a passion for me. And there is a movie that's coming out called 1917 that is directed by the guy that did Skyfall, Mendoza or Mensa or something like that. Mendez, yes. And the director of photography is Roger Deakins, who is my favorite cinematographer of all time. He is phenomenal when it comes to getting beautiful images out of whatever he's shooting on. And I have been geeking out about that movie because they've put out behind the scenes of how they're producing that movie. And the entire movie is one shot. It's all one shot from beginning to end. No cuts. Like, it's all one shot. What? And it looks really phenomenal. Mm. Just amazing. And I am so excited. I can't remember when it's coming out, but man, I've been geeking out so hard on the behind the scenes for that and, you know, cinematic tricks and things of how they're putting this one shot movie together. Because it just looks incredible.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that one when I went to see Joker, which is what I'm geeking out about. If you guys haven't seen it, pretty sweet. I liked it.
Did you love it or did you just like it?
The more that I stew on it, the more I like it in retrospect. It was super intense. Like, once it got going, like, and intentionally so, it's very jarring, some shots. But, I mean, that's the result of having a rated R Joker movie, which I hope a lot of other properties not just go the jokey Deadpool route, but take it seriously and do, you know, deeper dives, deeper character studies, because there was like virtually no action in this quote unquote comic book movie. There was no superhero, you know, there's no giant army of mindless robots invading. There was no sky beams, you know, all these things that are in like the typical superhero trope movie. It was none of that. Now it was like a breath of fresh air as far as that goes. And they had a lot of some fan service in there. There were some nods to things, and I watched a lot of behind the scenes and like Easter egg type of reveal videos for it, and like things that they're pointing, like not just like DC things, but like references to other movies, even like silent movies and all these things that I had no idea about, that I'm like, oh wow, they put that much thought into this little thing that he did that was a reference to this other thing way back in the day. Like, it was pretty cool.
I heard that it was basically Taxi Driver.
That also is true.
King of comedy, right?
And king of comedy mixed together. Yeah. But the director acknowledged the similarities between them. And I think and that's obviously a nod to those because it has Robert De Niro in it. So, and they're sort of, it's like on the nose because of that. But I would definitely recommend it if you have a chance to see it. It's good.
Was all
the commotion about the violence?
Yeah, all the like negative press that it was getting. Like,
there's
was
way
it
more violence than other stuff. Like, that's I didn't think
well,
it was.
Well, no. It wasn't so much about the violence as it was the.
You're trying to empathize with a serial killer.
Villain.
Normalize.
Yeah. Normalize that. Yeah, that's the word.
There's been a lot of other films that have done that too.
Yeah.
I just think this one's under more scrutiny because of the property that it's related to.
Mm-hmm. And I think with the gun hysteria and the nationalists and all that stuff that it's trying to, allegedly the people who are upset about this movie are saying that it tries to like give you pause and humanize people that are doing these atrocious, you know, mass murders and things, and right, try to get you to have feelings for them instead of the victims.
Well, even like King of Comedy and Taxi Driver, like those are movies that came out like 40 years ago, and those are way more violent. And they're sort of come from the same angle, at least, you know, Taxi Driver, of like relating to this guy who kind of breaks and stuff. And Breaking Bad is sort of a long version of that, right? But it's showing like the descent into madness, basically, and all the links he'll go through, and it's just condensed down into a two-hour movie.
That's a good point.
I haven't seen the movie, but I was under the impression that it was also highlighting the fact of people who need help that aren't getting that help.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's a commentary in society as well, for sure. That's a big aspect of it. And, I mean, I think some of that's deserved in my point of view. Some people don't get the help they need through various things that happen. Obviously, how you deal with that, like, is a big factor. I mean, I watched one video and they made a good point in that, like, a lot of parallels that you can draw from Joker, you can draw to Batman. Like, they both, you know, had questionable upbringing, you know, like tragedy, right?
Different choices.
When they were young. Yeah, they took different choices and diverged from that point. So it's almost like a mirror, which they've, you know, that's not something new for this movie coming out. It's, they've always kind of had that with those two characters relating to each other.
I think in literature they called it like a foil.
Right.
It's kind of, yeah.
But, yeah, think for yourself. Go see it. I liked it.
I'm geeking out about a documentary that Wes and I were talking about last week called Inside Bill's Brain on Netflix. And it is a documentary about – it's a three-part documentary about Bill Gates and him – kind of highlights him, his background, how he grew up, some pretty interesting things about him and the way his brain works. And each episode is him trying to tackle a different massive call it social problem, although – One of them is mainly about like sanitary issues in other countries, and I'm absolutely fascinated by it. I watched it twice. I watched it once by myself, and then I sat down and watched it with my wife, and just kind of got me thinking a lot about social issues and, you know, how things should be allocated to help, and just very, very interesting person. And
yeah, it was pretty eye opening.
Yeah. Regardless of how people feel about him because of how he ran Microsoft and the antitrust stuff, very, very interesting of what he's doing in his so-called retired years at this point.
And they don't really beat around the bush either when they reference the antitrust stuff either. They ask pretty pointed questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did good. Yeah.
I think it's from the same guy, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with the documentary. I think it's the same guy that directed a documentary called Waiting for Superman that was a documentary about education that ruffled a lot of feathers several years ago. It definitely made some impacts on, you know, my profession and district. So, good stuff. How about you, Josh?
I had a couple things. I'm finally trying to finish my Master Sword, the one I printed a long time ago. Anthony, who I work with, printed one also, so now we're having like a race to see who can get theirs done first. My dad is coming into town tomorrow. I've lived in like many houses as an adult, and he's been to like one of them one time, so he's finally deciding to give up his apparently travel ban, his self-imposed travel ban. He's coming to Kentucky and hanging out with us, so that'd be cool.
Nice.
But I had a cool dad moment a little while ago. I don't know if you guys have had this yet. So my son does his homework on like our house kind of computer that was our house computer well before he was born. So it's got iTunes on it, and it's an older kind of iMac, and so it hasn't been updated a lot. And it has playlists on there, and it has, like, my playlist from my iTunes account. And then there was a playlist for him that I made when he was a baby with, like, lullaby songs and stuff on it. Well, as he's doing his homework, like, he bought himself a pair of headphones just because he thinks headphones are cool. So he's got his headphones plugged in doing his homework, and apparently he's been listening to my playlists for music that I enjoy. I'm like, oh, God, what are you listening to? And he's telling me this, and I was like, oh, crap, this could be bad. And so he's like, no, I took him and put him on my playlist. So he finds songs that I like, and now he's adding them to his own playlist. And so I'm going through there kind of curating, like, okay, those are fine. Any gangster rap? No. But I'm like, I'm scared. And then a part of me turned a corner, and I'm like, this kid has good taste in music. And he's like, and he asked me, he's like, do you have any more music like this? I was like, oh boy. And he's been doing the dishes lately, and he hates it, and he whines about it. And I'm like, well, when I was a kid and I had to do the dishes, I had a CD player, and I'd put a CD in my CD player, put my headphones on, just do the dishes just fine because I was occupied. I'm like,
what's a CD, Dad?
Yeah, exactly. Tell me about these olden times. I was like, well, I have an old phone, and so I made him pretty much a mixtape playlist that I put on Amazon Music. And so I have my old phone, and now he can plug his headphones in, and that old phone is only to play Dad's mixtape while you do the dishes.
That's cool.
And so I got to make my son a mixtape. I'm like, I didn't understand how fulfilling and gratifying this is for me. And so the whole day I'm like, Ooh, I got to put this on there. I'm like, I got to put some, how about the White Stripes? He's got to know this song. This song you need to know. Like, a little bit of Radiohead. I'm like, the edited version of that song. This song was important to me at this particular moment. And so it's, you get to introduce your your kids to things that informed how you grow up, and maybe they think they suck, and maybe they won't, or maybe they'll become Star-Lord. Like, I don't really know where this is going, but it was a moment that I have yet to experience. It was pretty cool.
Tell your 18-year-old self that you're listening to a mixtape on a phone.
Yeah, really.
Okay. A tape?
There's no tapes, first off. You still call them mixtapes. You have a phone that doesn't look like a phone that has a picture of a phone when you're trying to use the phone. It's very confusing.
Speaking of mixtapes, have you watched Elizabethtown since you live there?
I have never watched that movie.
You should watch it. It's got a heavy music base to it.
That's good.
And it has a lot of
I may or may not live in that town. I may live in a completely different town in Kentucky.
Well, it may or may not have been filmed in Elizabethtown. That's true. I mean,
From what I gather from parts. People who live in that town, there were like two scenes in the movie that were actually shot there.
I think it's pretty good. It's underrated, I think.
No, I like it too. I agree with Wes.
Is that the one with Kirsten Dunst and...
Yeah, Orlando Bloom, Legolas, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I never watched it. Never mind.
No, it's worth it. But if you hate Tom Petty, you probably won't like it, because there's a lot of Tom Petty in it.
I like Tom Petty.
But I did find out that Stripes was filmed. Did I talk about this already?
I don't remember.
Like it's been a while.
1970s Bill Murray military
Stripes.
Movie?
Yep, Stripes was filmed on Fort Knox, which is also... really near that town that you mentioned that people could live in. And it was filmed in Louisville, and it was filmed in Fort Knox. And like a lot of the buildings have been torn down, but they like kept one of those barracks buildings from that scene. And I guess part of it was also filmed in that town that you mentioned. And so it was that, and most of Goldfinger was taped on Fort Knox because that's where the gold depository is. This is neat little things about the state of Kentucky that I'm learning that I didn't really know that I knew. So my dad's coming to town. We're going to that speakeasy that I went to that time, that super secret one. We're going to go there. It's going to be cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
All right. Well, I'd love to hear from all of you. We have a website, makegeeks.com, right there on the website, contact page. You could ask some questions, make any suggestions for the show. And on the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes right there on makegeeks.com.
You know, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but the Making Geeks podcast Instagram account is alive and kicking again. So that's exciting to see that up and running. But aside from that, all the stuff that we do here together, we also do stuff individually. Josh can be found over at Josh_makestuff, or his stuff with Bob at I Like to Make Stuff. Wes is found at Geeksmithing, and be on the lookout for maybe something very cool NES related. In the near future.
Yes.
Sean can be found over at Gig Builders, and I can be found at Once Upon a Workbench.
I would like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for helping us with their financial contributions, especially our top patron, C3D Prop Shop. Thank you so much for your support, buddy. It helps a lot.
Thanks, Clint.
And Josh, I would like to thank everybody.
Sorry, I want to interject just for one quick second because I want to give credit where credit is due. My wife was tired of seeing the Instagram account with nothing on it, so she's the one that kind of stepped up, and that's why it's kind of springing back to life. So
I was wondering. I got tagged in an Instagram post as we are speaking right now, and I can see most of your hands. And I'm like, I don't know how that just happened, but okay. So thank you.
Thank you.
So besides thanking Sean's wife, I'd like to thank everybody in the YouTube live chat for hanging out with us. That usually happens every Thursday around 9:30 Eastern Standard Time here in the States. And for everybody else, episodes come out every Saturday to your podcast player of choice. And from all of us to all of you, we hope you have a fantastic
week. See you later. And so, like, my fingers, like, just underneath it, like, going...